Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
God, Monday morning. Assalamu alaikum. And how are you this Monday morning?
Well, alhamdulillah. How are yourself?
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah.
Yes, alhamdulillah. Wa alaikum assalam.
It's another day. The nation is waking up, talking about the fact that it is 9/11. I'm not sure celebrating is the right word. I always struggle with that word when it comes to this particular day. I'm not sure about you too, but, you know, I don't think it's the right word.
Mm-hmm. Memorializing or commemorating.
Yeah, there you go. Recognizing, right? I wanted to talk today about this conflict of freedom and free Israel. A lot happening around the country and here in the Bay about what that means. You know, for those listening, if you didn't grab a copy of our synopsis for this week, we're going to be talking about, we're not necessarily free, but we're free-ish. And what is freedom? What's the accountability factor that goes along with being free? So we're going to start, as we start each week, with a little bit of a check-in. Sister Matala and Brother Fleming, do you remember the Arsenio Hall show?
Yes.
You said you can never forget what, Brother Fleming?
The barking.
The what? The barking.
The barking.
The barking beginning of the show. The dog
pass. The barking of Arsenio Hall show. The woo, woo, woo. And all that goes along with that. I'll hold my comment until later, but. He brought some different perspectives, but I will never forget that. To open a program like that sort of bothered me a little bit in my genetic code.
But I remember the first episode, I think, was that coming out of high school? I started college early, but I just remember that back in the 80s and in the 90s, I was in college when his show went off the air in the mid-90s. Early mid-90s, something like that, 93 or something like that. But I remember part of his show, the barking, of course, the dog pound, that he would say things to make you go, right? So last week we said, what got you up at night? What's got you scratching your head? So same thing, two things. Tell us something that make you two things. What's making your heart warm and what's making you scratch your head at humanity this week? What you got? I know, sister, I think you started last week, so, brother. What's making your heart warm and what's making you scratch your head this week?
Well, in terms of making my heart warm, I literally had just left New York before the 9/11 catastrophe. In fact, I used to go into the World Trade Center on my way to work on Wall Street on a daily basis. And I know many people did not hear about the level of bravery among the average citizen in that area beyond the fire department and the police department, who did a phenomenal job, especially the fire department in New York City. But there were a lot of unspoken heroes who did what they could to assist the people. And it just sort of reminds you of the character of this country when you really get down to the core of it, beyond the politics, beyond the media suppositions about our character, and get down to the core of the average person in this country, that's an essence of a human being that's willing to help each other in times of crisis and sometimes without a crisis. And so that always gives my heart up an extra jump to see that occur. We had a situation here in North Carolina, in fact, where a young man literally walking through the neighborhood, saw a house on fire and ran to the door, pulled the senior citizen out of the house, didn't even wait around for the police and the fire department to get there, just went about his business. They had to actually find this young brother. He just happened to be an African-American male whose image you very rarely see, unfortunately, on TV and that kind of posture. But that's just a small indication of the human spirit that's still in America. So that always encourages my heartbeat. What disappoints me a little bit is that how people are so easily weighed by the media. I guess I wasn't really brought up with a TV in front of me all the time. I was outside playing sometimes cowboys and girls and playing marbles and playing, you know, different games in the neighborhood. But a lot of outdoor activity, playing basketball. So I wasn't tied onto the TV as much as the generation is today, or for that matter, on technology as much as they are today. So I'm just a little concerned how we're allowing this idiot box, this little hand idiot box called a computer, influencing our culture, norms, and perspective of each other. And that concerns me. So we've got to come up with a different model to suggest to the people, get away from the technology sometime, get away from the idiot box, and just talk to each other more and watch TV less. Those are my two issues for today. Inshallah.
Those are good ones. Those are good ones. Sister, what you got for us? What's warm and what's scratchy?
Well, the warm, I think I'm going to have to come back to that one. What's scratching, what has my head shaking is our senators and our congresspeople. I mean, I really wonder, well, I'll say the state of our politics, because some of the candidates that they have in the GOP and their talking just amazes me. But Tommy Tuberville, Comer, McCarthy, DeSantis, Lindsey Graham, you know, Perdue, Loeffler, all of these ones that are just, you wonder who elected these folks? How did they get elected? And how are they staying in their office with their crazy actions and their dirty hands? So that really has my head shaking. It's amazing to me. And I look at Nikki Haley and Vivek Swamirathi, I believe his name is, how just a generation from immigration of their parents, how they seem to have forgotten from whence they came, you know, and Vivek, some statement he made about if he became president, he would not allow the children of immigrants who have come into this country illegally to become citizens, children that are born in this country, which is against the Constitution. So I just wonder. There's some basic things, it seems to me, you should have together before you put yourself out in front of the public to run for a political office. You should at least be familiar with the Constitution of the United States, if that's what you have to swear to enforce. So my head is really shaking. What has my heart, I don't know if I could say warm at this point, but I will kind of conclude with a statement similar to Brother Fleming in terms of when you see the goodness in humanity, in people, to respond in situations of dire consequence, you know, with the earthquake in Morocco, and you see the official folks responding, but then you see just neighbors responding, trying to rescue people using their bare hands, or five or six of them trying to move a boulder out of the street that's blocking ambulance. It just lets you see the goodness in people. And similarly, the response of just everyday people with the horrific fire in Maui, people responding to the cleanup efforts after the Hurricane Idalia. It just shows you that underneath it all, and regardless to ethnicity, political persuasion, that the goodness of a human being can come out. It's a shame that it takes these tragic situations for us to show it. We need to show it more in everyday situations. So that's me for today.
Wonderful, 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 wonderful. I think for me this week, I'm still scratching my head. Going back to what you said about the legislators, I heard an interview. I just heard it last night, early this morning, I guess, because it was about 1:30 this morning. One of the, there was an interview with, you know, we have three people vying for the U.S. Senate position, and a question was asked of Congresswoman Katie Porter. The question was asked, he said, Well, you know, I know this is a sensitive subject, and with what happened with Mr. Mitch McConnell, and then what happened with Senator Feinstein, with him freezing up his camera, and with Senator Feinstein, with her recent medical issues, do you think it's time for term limits or an age limit in our U.S. politics? And her answer is very political. She said, well, I'm all for diversity in our in everything, and we need lots of generations. We need to stay intergenerational, and we need our elders just like we need, you know, my generation. And she starts talking about being, you know, Gen X, and you guys know I love my Gen X, but still, she said we need everyone. We need the older generation, we need the younger generation, we need all the generations, we need the wisdom, and we need all of those things. And so I think we need a wonderful mix of everyone participating in the political system. So in other words, she didn't answer the question. And so I was scratching my head to say, I would have had more respect for you if you would have just straight up answered the question about, you don't have to answer the question about those two individuals that he mentioned, but you could have answered the question about term limits without even mentioning age, because I think term limits has nothing to do with age necessarily. It might be correlated, but there's a couple of people there who, younger people who have lost their mind up in the Congress who don't need to be there. So I think I was scratching my head on that one, so I just didn't know. And then on another note, with legislature, which I'm going to stick with, California State Legislature has passed the CAST Act from our own Muslima, Aisha Wahab, out of committee in the governor's signature. First in the nation. So, alhamdulillah, you can clap. It will be a protected class. And she has faced death threats and everything else. She's facing a recall effort. So, that is, we pray for her. We stand by her. And this is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And she's facing all of that from Asian Americans who don't want it to pass up for all things, and mostly men. So I applaud her, and we stand with her.
Yeah.
So with that, we're going to take a quick break because I want to get right into this discussion. This will probably take all day, and I know both of you have some thoughts on this, on this subject this morning, because it's one that's been weighing heavily all over the country, and it has not only moral implications, but financial. And the answers are escaping us right now. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come right back.
Okay.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the Bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Peace be with you, and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rajee, and Instructor Henry Hasid. This program they are sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Pitzer as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you, and have a pleasant day.
God's peace be upon you. This is Muhammad Sharif. As we know, everything begins with the seed. Rain International is world leader in seed nutrition and the first to market seed-based products. Our flagship product is called Soul, S-O-U-L. The main ingredient is the black cumin seed. Here are a few reasons to drink Soul. Supports the healthy immune system. Give a body boost to stay healthy and strong. Improve indigestion. Decrease infection. Remove inflammation and other benefits. This is an opportunity to improve your health and increase your wealth. Please call or text me at 914-434-375. Please join me in supporting CWSC. God's peace be upon you. This is Muhammad Sharif. As we know, everything begins. God's peace be upon you. This is Muhammad Sharif. As we know, everything begins with the seed. Rain of the nationalist world.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Imam Mikhail Ukda, Assistant Imam of Masjid Al-Halim, New Medina, Mississippi. Asking you to join me in supporting Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatullah Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
And we are back with my co-host, this is Cheryl Sadis, and back with Sister Amatullah Alashi Sabri and Brother Fleming Alamein. Welcome back to the show. We are talking free-ish, freedom and accountability in America here on the day of 9/11. And we have a handout. Sister Martha. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. Yes. Yes. God's peace be upon everyone. And quickly, right to your question at the top, I just thought about in reference to parents, African-American parents taking charge of teaching, learning how to teach the history, to making it a thing on their heart and mind in the community. They're putting it on their heart and mind, and then they're teaching it now, establishing a teaching process to share about the history, and they're calling on the faith community to do likewise. Because, you know, so you, I don't know if you know, but indicating that some of the books and things that contain the history is being removed from the library shelves. But Almighty God is in charge. So that was heavy on my heart. And then what's warm on my, that's warm on my heart, really. But what's heavy was the political picture right now as well. And I'm just stunned at how haywire, how crazy it looks. But after all is said and done, I'm sure the dust will come together and then the best decisions will be made. I'll leave it right there. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow, Lake Massa, wonderful. Oh. I like both those comments. Alhamdulillah. With that, let's bring in our guest today, who are both fathers, both entrepreneurs, both community. I'm gonna blend in a word, and one of these guys is gonna hate it because he hates when I make up words, or he doesn't like when I let me not use the word hate, but he does not like when I make up words. Activist, not activist. I'm blending in the words activist and advocates. How's that, Troy? I'm making up a word. I'll make my own words up. But both of them have been working really hard. You know, they've been they're mentors to young men. And they just, you know, and the frustration that all of us are feeling, especially, you know, on the East Coast and the West Coast, and we've just been dealing with this for so long. So, you know, we're living in this time when we've got assault crime rising. We've got violent property crimes rising. We've got these wishy-washy look towards what personal responsibility and accountability looks like, and what does collective responsibility look like in our communities. So I wanted to take a look at that today in rise of what we talked about in the last 2 weeks with the Muslim Convention. We had the ISNA gathering recently, and here in Oakland, there was recently a gathering of the DAs, the sheriff, the city council. There was a similar one in L.A., Seattle, St. Louis, Atlanta, New York. New York just had another 1,100 migrants brought into its city by bus. Houston is facing the same issue. Everybody knows the problem, but what is the solution? So I wanted to have just a quick introduction. But before you guys start, we have the same question for you this morning, Troy. And Lorenzo went right there on mute. There's Lorenzo. So Troy and Lorenzo, quick question for you. What's making your heart tingle a little warm this Monday morning? And what's making you scratch your head? Tell us a little bit. Tell us who you are. I gave you a quick introduction, but give us the quick synopsis, Troy and Lorenzo. I mean, to give answer those two questions. You're on the hot seat.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Assalamualaikum.
Alaykum salam. Yes. Let's see. What's making my heart warm? I would say just the small community on this line right now that holds the same family values as me, that is based on a religious background, that we have a higher power and a higher standard that we try to live our lives accordingly. That's the warm part, because that is very contagious. I will share this conversation with others. And what's making my heart scratch my head be how some family heads have given up and allowed social media to raise their children, and how the value of the religious background and teachings has disappeared, and the fight to make that a priority has subsided in this world. I think that's very challenging to me. To hear and to see. That's it.
Love it. Troy Finley, what you got for us?
So, let's go with what's scratching my head first. I think that does go in, I think, what the brother was saying earlier, the idea of, and Lorenzo just touched on the idea of what we're letting our children be raised by. And I think it's the idea we're not hands-on anymore with our children. We're not hands-on anymore with our community. We're kind of letting things happen and then coming back and complaining about it. You know, we'll see things and we'll hear things and we'll, you know, say how wrong it is. We'll talk about it amongst our friends, but we don't take the time to say, you know what, let's fix this. And that's a problem. And the good part of everything that's going on is that I think even politically, we can go politically with this one, we're seeing how people are getting tired of that. That same old, even with politics, everybody's getting tired of, you know, your Marjorie Taylor Greens. We're getting tired of complaining about things, but we're looking for solutions now. And that's a big thing for me. I think just the idea of people looking to find a way out of that, and out of this mess, is a good thing. So those are my two. Hello, everybody.
Quick question for you. When I say the word freedom, mm-hmm. what does it mean to you? Either one of you can answer.
So,
what does freedom mean?
I love how you put it when you said free-ish. And because that's an important thing to look at. Because all the aspects of freedom goes into what we're free to do, right? If we're free to go to school, we're free to get a job, we're free to buy a house, you know, we're free to start a business. But it's only at a certain level, I think, right? It's only at a level of being allowed to go so far. So it is, you know, there still is a price. Actually, when you said that, I wrote down, what is the price of freedom and is it fair? You know, and that becomes to stir a lot of different questions. But I do believe we are free, but then at the same time, we're free with limits. Free with limits.
Well, I'd like to just add that freedom can be deadly without proper direction, without being grounded in something bigger than ourselves. We've proven this over and over again. If you don't have anything that you stand for, you fall for everything. There's too much stimulation out there to confuse people, and that has been the biggest trickery of all. You can have all the freedom that you want, but when you have nothing to ground you, your freedom is lost.
Actually, I like that. Let's stay there for a second. So, Sister Matala and Brother Fleming, so a few weeks ago, we were talking to a couple of college students who were talking about their time. Sister Matala, you remember, about how much time they have on their hands, right? I remember when my sons went off to school in Atlanta, and we were talking to, you know, we're sitting, and I went back out there a couple months later. You know, students are always so happy to go off to school, especially if they're going away. And we moved them all in, and they were all happy. Of course, you know, they're away. And they get real excited. Can't wait for you to get out of that, their dorm, their off their campus, out of their state. They can do what they want to do, right? So one of the things, though, I noticed, I showed back up about a month and a half later. I had an EEO conference in Atlanta, and I went to meet my sons for lunch. Both of them were in Morehouse. I went to meet him for lunch. My oldest son, he had already been through this period of adjustment a few years earlier. He was a senior, the other one was a freshman. And so he tried to explain it to the younger one. But it's something that you cannot explain. It's something that you have to go through in order to understand that you have 24 hours in a day, 7 days a week. Everybody gets the same 168 hours in a week. And of those 168, you have to sleep, eat, and if you're an athlete, which they both were, get your, do your athletics, do your homework, get your studying, get your prep work, whatever, a workout, and do whatever else you need to get done. Now, you're free not to go to class if you don't want to, but there's consequences. You're free not to work out, but there's consequences. The professor does come to your room and wake you up and say you're out of class. Your mom doesn't come to your dorm anymore, like at home to your room and say, wait, what are you still doing here? Aren't you supposed to be at the school? Nobody's coming to tell you to get to the calf. The calf's going to close. Calf only serves from 8 to, you know, from 6 o'clock to like 9 breakfast. And you're going to miss it, right? So if you sit outside the calf at a college long enough, you will see people dashing in 5 minutes before it closed trying to stuff apples in their pockets. Boxes of cereal because they missed, they overslept and they missed it. But there's a certain freedom that comes with college. The young man said, do you remember the discussion, Sister Marcelita, where the young man was talking about, he had all this freedom, his brother tried to warn him about it, and he didn't understand what his brother was talking about. You got to learn how to manage your time.
Yes, Jabril.
Jabril. Yes. So, Larisa, you're on point there, right, when you're talking about freedom and learning what to do with that freedom. And this is in all aspects. The other thing about freedom is when they told us they weren't going to give us, now this is going to lead to the discussion about crime. They said, we're going to stop giving you bags at the store. Bring your own bag. Bring your own shopping bag. What did that do? Oh, okay. You want me to bring my own shopping bag into the store, then you want me to stop at the register to talk to you on my way out of the store. Now, for most of us, that's an okay principle. But what has that led to? I'll let you guys talk.
So,
what has that done to people who don't normally have self-control? Go ahead.
So are you saying that since bringing in our own shopping bags has led to the idea that if I'm putting this in my own bag and doing this my own way, this has led to the idea of what we are seeing right now in the rise of crime? And I'm asking that because there's several things.
Shoplifting has started. There was shoplifting before, but remember, remember that the shoplifting was, if you take your mind back about 5 to 7 years, and when people came in the stores with their own bags, when they came in the stores with backpacks, when they came in the stores with large handbags or purses, they said, you have to leave your bag up front. You cannot, as a student, you can't bring your backpack in. Or you can, you can't bring a suitcase, you can't bring that big bag in. You have to leave it up front, right? And it quelled a lot of shoplifting. But when we were overdue gooders, and we said, you know what, it's too many plastic bags. We're going to do good for the planet. It killed business. Why did it kill business? Because now you're saying, bring your own bag in. Oh, you want me to bring my own bag in? Oh, okay, I'm going to bring my own bag in. So while I'm bringing my own bag in, here's this guy said, oh, no, my backpack is my bag. And I'm watching people throwing steaks and everything. I'm watching them in the aisle. Now, I have to bring a bag because I use the crutches and I carry it. But I take that bag and put it on the counter and let them unpack it and pack it back up. But I'm watching people in the aisle stuffing. They look at me and just wink, like, what's up? And then zip it up and walk out. Because, and the stores are at a, they're just baffled, right? So on the one hand, yes, you're saving, and as an environmental scientist, you know, I love the fact that we're saving the plastic. But on the other hand, it's at what expense? Sister Amatsula, you were going to say something. I heard your voice.
I heard a couple of young people talking about that. I think it was in regards to, they use the terminology BIP as far as when people break into your car and whatnot. And so they were saying something about, well, so-and-so was BIP the other night. So you better be careful and take that, you know, whatever was in the car, take it with you. And then the conclusion they came to was that the stimulus money that a lot of people got, this was free money that they was getting, that they got, and it enabled them to have more spending power. And so now they're back to, okay, you better get out there and huff it and, you know, find what your grind is or go get a J-O-B or try and start up a business or whatever. And so it's tougher now. So they feel entitled to take what they want. Now, that was how some young folks interpreted why youngsters, even maybe, you know, these were like late 30 folks, and they were talking more or less about maybe, let's say, 17 to, you know, 30-ish kind of age group, which I thought was very interesting because I hadn't put together that free money with now. I think everything should be free to me. So that was interesting. A perspective. I know I've walked into a Walgreens last week, I think it was, and I mean everything is behind glass cases. You know, you can't get a nail clip hardly without somebody having to come open the glass case, and it's because they're losing so much money. I think my husband was at a Home Depot, and the guy was saying that that particular store loses almost $1 million a month in things going out of the door that people aren't paying for. So it's a tremendous drag on our economy, let alone the moral drag it has to have on the individual. They don't see it, but every time you do that theft, that's a darkness that's entering your soul. That's it for me.
You know,
yeah.
I love that. It's just the angle of these young people have gotten a sense of entitlement that then that, you know, that they don't have to work for anything. Everything should be free to them or given to them. And it's okay for their attitude to be, well, if it's there and I want it, I should have it. And I think that has gotten back to what we were talking, some of the topics from earlier, just the idea of what, how we're not hands-on anymore. We're not teaching our kids. You know, some of us do, but as a whole, we're not teaching our kids how to be responsible or be accountable for things, and not understanding when you do get caught that there is, you know, there's consequences for your actions and accepting that. So, but that's a very good point. You know, the COVID money has messed up a lot of things. It has helped some people and it's helped some businesses, but I think we're seeing that as being, you know, an ingredient into this whole mess.
Right.
Well, part of it is that...
I got a couple of things.
Yeah, hold on. Just a second. Let me see. Sister Mata, finish your thought and deal with me, so go ahead. Go ahead. What are you going to say, Sister Mata?
I was going to take a level of maturity, moral maturity, to see that even in a situation where I get a helping hand, you know, be thankful for that. But that is not a license for you to just take indiscriminately. And I think that what we're missing is parent is not modeling and teaching those moral principles, someone outside of the home, whether it's the TV influence, whether it's the gang influence, whether it's the pimp influence, whether it's the gangster in the community influence, they're going to have an influence over that young mind. And what we're seeing that is not a good influence. We see it in the music. You got to be a thug, or, you know, you got to spend your time in jail, you know. You got to, what they say, slang. You got to slang that dope, you know. All of those negative influences, if that parent is not modeling and teaching that in the home, someone else is doing the work of Satan.
Right.
That's it for me.
Thank you. Lorenzo?
Excellent. Took the words out of my mouth. I think it's more or less a tier system on how we got here. You know, anytime that you're given anything, you relax somebody's mind, you make them lazy, you wait for a handout. You know, this started back, I don't know, years ago, when we had food stamps and we had all these things given to us. It could have been for a legitimate reason to help. But on the back end, it has made people lazy, made people entitled, because they'll just sit down and wait. And the people that put those things in order knew that that was going to entrap and handicap a person's mind. When you just wait on a certain time of the month to get a handout, it totally brought you down and totally has brought society down, because prior to that, when you had to earn a living for yourself, it made us stronger individuals and also as a whole. And I think that one of the traps that we fell into was waiting on that handout, because ambition is gone. And it leads you to doing some of those things that you guys were talking about. It made a subculture that was, that brought crime, that brought all of those things, all the negative factors. It made it glorified. And once it glorified, it's submerged in every part of society right now. You can't go on Netflix without seeing anything that glorifies something good. Everything has a satanic backdrop, and it glorifies everything that is wrong. Once you have idle time and you put those two things together with the influences, it creates the scenario that we're into today. And then you go ahead and then you add in that entitled attitude, because that ambition is gone.
This is good. Before I say anything, Brother Fleming, you have something you want to add?
Yes, let me
take your hands,
second,
people. I'm
going
to take your hands after I talk to Brother Fleming. I see your hands, everybody. Go ahead, Brother Fleming.
Thank you, Sister Cheryl. You know, I got to say two things very quickly. There is really no true freedom without true responsibility. And I could spend an hour just talking about that concept, but I'll be very brief. After just coming back from Accra, Ghana for about 12 days, and been in a country where there is no Department of Social Services, if your family doesn't take care of you, then you don't have any taken care of. And so every child in that environment that I was in was doing something industrious, making something, selling something, trying to make a living for themselves, and that's sort of ingrained in their DNA. Sadly, in our situation, we've shifted. At one point, we were very proud to be responsible. Our hands were makers and inventors. We have a rich history of inventors from Granville. I won't go through the whole history, but we were involved in industrious activity and making inventions to improve the quality of life. And we got beyond the civil rights movement, and these handouts from the government have really made some of us spoiled babies. And a spoiled baby is always whining about this, whining about that, instead of getting up and doing something about it. So this idea of freedom only boils down to being freakish and almost free-ish without responsibility. And we got to have that to make your life balance. Otherwise, you expect something without breathing for it. If you have to breathe, it means you got to work. If you don't exercise your lungs to work for it, no air comes into your body. So working is a part of being free.
Thank you for that. And I wanted to add to this because I love this about the COVID money, and I also what I wanted to say about that is, and why I wanted to tie that back to, like I say, about letting people, you know, come to getting rid. Some of the COVID money goes back to the do-gooder complex, right? The whole concept of sometimes well-intentioned actions can lead to these unintended consequences. These well-intentioned actions for the environment. Well, if we get rid of all of these plastic bags and we tell people to use the recycled bags, it'll be good for the environment, but it's bad for business. Because what it did was it perpetuated people's propensity to not exercise good judgment. And that good judgment is, wait, you mean tell me that I ain't got to stop by the register, I can just run up in this store and take what I want? And I know at least some of us have been in the store. We've seen some people run up in there, and because the register and them putting your stuff a bag that has the store's logo on it is the gateway to making sure that you pay is taken away. Because now that bag influence is gone. Because they're saying California law, now it's all over the country. It started with California. California was like, well, you know what? We're going to make you pay a nickel, 15 cents for a bag. But we can't make you pay for the bag. So if you don't want to pay for the bag, you can walk out of the store with your goods in your hand. Okay? But we can't, the security card it cannot touch you if you run up out the store. It came hand in hand. The only place that was smart enough that kept its pre get rid of the plastic bags rule in place was a place like Costco. Even Walmart had to change because Walmart used to, you know, check your receipts and how many things and count your items. But only Costco and Sam's Club, places like that, had that rule where, you know, because they always operated in the basket and put yourself in the box rule. But when that changed, the entitlement that some people had already became even more prevalent, right? That became even bigger. And so we always had these little programs, if you recall, where every once in a while the government would pick up business. Bailed out Wall Street, bailed out Ford, bailed out Chevy, bailed out banks. And so Americans started saying, what about us? Why are you not bailing us out? Get rid of some of these student loans. And, you know, banks are entitled, we are entitled. Okay, no problem. But we've always had things like, to Lorenzo's point, welfare and things like that. But we've always had people who worked to get it. When we started becoming lax on consequences. Now, I'm the last person who's going to tell you they believe in the prison industrial complex. I don't believe in over-policing. I don't believe in over-incarceration. But I do believe in consequences. And when we started this rule about not punishing people if it's under $900, we began to see the demise of our society as a whole. You can't make someone through the criminal legal system have morality. You can't do it. You can't legislate morality. But what you can do is make somebody go sit in the corner a little bit, whether it's in the jail or probation or parole or with a pretty little, it ain't too pretty, by the way, you know, ugly, bulky little ankle bracelet, and rethink some of the decisions that they've made in their life. But the fact that I was in Oakland this weekend and up and down Broadway, there's a sign that says curb theft, leave nothing in your car. And I had to sit here and take a box of Kleenex and put it in my trunk because I don't know if somebody's going to bust my window. For $1.49 box of Kleenex. Because everything is valuable to people. That's, guess where we are. So do the social circumstances drive crime? And this attitude, this lax attitude and this cultural shift towards what crime is? Or do our cultural attitude, do our attitudes cause the circumstances and consequences that lead to crime?
Definitely attitude. I think it's definitely attitude. You know, I would say back in the 50s, maybe during in a past time, I could say that the society has caused us to go into crime. But at this point, I don't believe that anymore. I think that social media has overstimulated everybody into thinking that you need to have the latest and the greatest, and you got to have it now. Everything about society is quick results. We want instant gratification. Nobody wants to work for it because everything has been generationally given to us. On a lot of different areas, so at this point it's all about the glorification of tangible goods. It is vanity that has been the number one driving force to why society is the way it is now. I totally believe that. I believe that that is what's pushing crime.
I mean, it really is. I do want to say this, because we keep talking about young people. We keep talking about young people, and I think I told both of you this before we got, when I was speaking to you, briefing you about the show. They just got a man here. I live in this little town, El Sobrante. He's 52 years old, you know. I'm like, dude, you're my age. What are you doing? 52-year-old guy who's my peer, in his house, almost $200,000 worth of stolen goods from high-end stores. This Asian guy who is, well, they call it a ring, but still. So he's not young. I mean, you know, old, but he ain't young. What are you doing?
But he had a position. He had a position.
Of course he did. He's the fence.
He was the
Well, he's not the fence. He's the middle guy. Go ahead, Troy.
The middle guy,
right?
So you do need that older person who can distribute everything and get money for stuff and so on and so forth. So everybody has a position in crime. But I do want to go back to what Lorenzo was saying. And the idea of instant gratification, a false sense of self, because kids these days, and I can't even say kids, because we have now, there's people who are in their 30s and 40s who are falling into the idea of, well, I need to look like this. I need to be this type of person, you know, and not doing what they know better. So, but it is social media and these sort of things are killing, are literally killing our communities just because they feel the need to keep up. They feel the need that, well, and he got that car, and he got that car and that girl. I want that car. I want that girl. So I need to do whatever I need to do to get that. And then they still see it, you know, the aspect of what these people have portrayed themselves to be on social media. And they're not understanding that a lot of these portrayals are actually that. They're just acts. They're not real. These people really don't have that kind of money. They really don't have those cards. They're just portraying this role, and people are following right behind it. And what does that leave out? And how you were saying, Cheryl, the idea of accountability. You raise the limit of what is considered a crime. So anything under that is, oh, well, whatever. You know, it's not that big of a deal. You know, you get a little slap on the wrist and you get sent on your way. And so that's what we used to get in trouble growing up. If I stayed out too late after the lights came on, it was a problem.
It was a problem.
I mean, you know. So you know, my tomorrow wasn't going to be the same. But nowadays,
it was a problem. But and the two of you, I mean, because we're peers, which is one of the reasons I wanted to get you on here. I mean, I just recall when my brother stole something from the candy store. My mother, I mean, and not only did they get it from my mother, I remember that my mother made a point every time we went over to my grandmother's house on the other side of the bridge. My mother would tell that story so they would get it from all of her sisters, you know. So one, two, three, there was eight of them. So they get it from all of them. My grandmother would get it. They get it at church. Everybody, mm-hmm. like, what would you think, boy? Pop this out of here. Now, and my cousins would get rasped when they get in trouble. And then, so not only did they have to take back what they took from the store owner, but my mother would make them take it back, pay the store owner for what they took, then go back and volunteer to clean up at the store owner. So you got, and they couldn't understand it. It was like, wait, still got to give them my money? Yeah, you shouldn't have took it. So you got to pay restitution. And then your punishment, now the punishment, you know, would be jail. So you ain't got to go to jail. But their jail was you go back and you sweep up in that man's place because you shouldn't have done it.
For
right?
Free.
And it was embarrassing to her because, you know, we know everybody in our neighborhood. So the consequence angle is
big, right?
To Brother Slim.
Because nowadays,
right?
Yeah, so nowadays what do we have? We have the, oh, my baby wouldn't do nothing kind of complex. That,
yes.
Oh, no, the police is always being after him. The police is, everybody's always getting at my baby, and he would never kill nobody. I know he had a gun in the front seat that wasn't his. I know he had on the bloody T-shirt from the crime scene that he just left. Yes, he did have all those stolen purses. But he's a good boy. It's just the police is always, no, he's a criminal. He's doing criminal activities. Let him get some help. Let him get in trouble. It's okay. Because what we're doing is we're justifying crime. We're justifying bad behavior, but then we want to complain about it on the other side, but not when it's one of our own or one of our own kids or family members who are committing these crimes, then we want to protect them. You know, and so there's that double-edged sword of accountability.
So how do we get past that? I want some more Maynard Jacksons. Maynard Jackson, do you guys remember Maynard Jackson?
Yes.
Well, I think that was a little bit before my time.
Yes.
He's the mayor of Atlanta because I was a student in Atlanta. This is how I remember. I was a student in Atlanta, and I remember Maynard Jackson's son. He was a bit older than us, Troy, but his son was running around pretending to Sister Immaculate's words. I love your words. By the way, he would run around thugging and drugging and acting up. Maynard had built, he came in after Andrew Jackson, but he had built a whole reputation as being, I'm not having it. I'm not having none of that. You know, and he said, you know, and everybody voted on him because of that. And he was a great mayor. You know, he cleaned up the streets of Atlanta. He cleaned up the corruption. And then he turned around and his son won't act up. His son wanted to act up. And then he found out his son was out there getting high and he's out here selling drugs and robbing people and carrying guns and slapping women around. He's just off the hook, right? Well, he had a warrant out for his arrest. And you know what Maynard did? Maynard did what my mother said she would have done. She told me she warned my brothers when we were young. Maynard said, son, on TV, he did a whole TV thing, said, son, I need you to call me. And then he made a deal with the police. He said, let me bring my son in. Because he was like, he didn't want his son hurt. And his wife was upset. Mm-hmm. She was upset with him. But he said, nah, because, you know, if they find him on the street, they're going to kill him, right? And then he said, he took his own son in. That's what we need. Because he said, yes, he's my son, but, you know, he has to be held accountable for this. He was doing wrong.
He
didn't hear
No, he was doing wrong, and that's how it happened.
I agree with that.
You remember?
No, but I agree with that concept because we came from the same stock of people, Southern people that believed in that. But I'm going to put something else in you guys' mind. Society knows all of that. They're listening in to us right now or what we're talking about. They know what's right from wrong. They know what works. They know what doesn't work. There's going to be, in my opinion, a takeover of either California by other entities, or they're getting us ready for an AI, some type of artificial intelligence policing. They're letting things get out of hand purposely to get us ready for the next wave that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's what it is. They're letting all of this happen. They know how to stop it if they want. Every single thing, it's not coincidental, every single thing has been set up to fail. So what's next, what the big picture is the real question. I believe it's going to be
sometimes. I don't think I disagree with you.
Yeah, that's where it's going. This is just like the Roman Empire. It's crumbling from the inside out. There's a bigger play here.
No, I agree.
Let's take the premise, Lorenzo, that what you're saying is, in fact, what the plan is. Then I think the challenge is on faith-based leaders, community leaders, mom and dad in the home to take responsibility, like Brother Fleming said, freedom demands responsibility. And we've been given the idea that freedom means just, it's your thing, do what you want to do. No, that's not freedom
right.
in a civil society. So let's take on the challenge of instilling those good old moral values in our children. If you don't have children, you can still mentor in your community. And we have to start having imams preaching in the masjid, in the mosque, in the temple, bishops and preachers in the church. Oh, wait a minute, this has to stop. This whole concept of snitching is wrong. This whole concept of thugging is wrong. We got to get these drugs out of our community, and we have to set up the programs and do the one-on-one that's necessary in organizing our community to return to our natural self, which is a good human being. And we have to instill strong moral values in our coming generations. And not let them hold up people who was Al Pacino's character? I still haven't seen The Godfather. you know,
I'm going to let that go.
That's a big problem. They've taken on these images that Hollywood has fed us. Hollywood fed the images to us. The record label reinforced it with the lyrics that they have these rappers putting out. And the thing that irks the heck out of me is graffiti. You can't ride down the street without seeing graffiti all over the place. Is it a legitimate art
That's
form?
True.
It can be. But when you just prevent blight in your community by scrolling your initials on somebody's building, that is not a legitimate art form. So we have to be brave enough to call out the truth.
I like it. I, I also I also think we have to be brave enough to do what some are not doing, and that's call out public officials who are not willing to do what you just said. So how do we get people comfortable with speaking about these uncomfortable topics, stepping up, being responsible, being responsive to the needs of the community versus this greedy, self-centered, self-righteous, me-only principles? How do we make sure people are being responsible and accountable and that they have to pay retribution when they harm others? So that but we don't have to tear other people down. But at the same time, yes, I don't want over-policing. Yes, I don't want over-incarceration. But you got to pay some penance when you do harm. I think that all these people who are talking about, they're hurting. The youth are hurting. You ain't hurting when you over here robbing Tiffany. You ain't hurting because you over here robbing Nike for $300 Jordan. You hurting when you got to go in here and get some milk and some diapers for your children. Yes, I'm judging. No, you're not hurting because you over here getting $200 new linen. You don't need them for survival. You don't need to come over here running into Sephora, taking $100,000 worth of product. You're not hurting because you need that $1,300 iPhone. That's not hurting. Hurting is when you need the basics to eat and survive. There's no hurting. And so how do we get people comfortable with challenging this notion that, well, what we need to do is we need to solve the underlying issues first, because people are dying and babies starving while you're sitting here trying to assuage the criminal, and then saying that, well, the criminal justice system has always been built for the victim. And this is what our DAs are saying, a couple of the DAs, not all of them, but here, especially in Alameda County, right? But this your job. That's what a DA is. A district attorney is a prosecutor. And if you ain't prosecuting, why you're a DA? Prosecute. Because some of them obviously have never been robbed, had your car broken into, had your house broken into, and lose your sense of peace, got hit upside the head, been raped or sexually assaulted. And having been through any of this, my sympathy for a criminal is you make a choice when you become a criminal. You make a choice. And now we've changed the language from my daughter is getting her master's in public health. She says she was sitting in class, and one of the do-gooders, that's what I'm going to call them, said when someone says something about, so what do we do when we encounter, this is in Boston, there was a not far from where her class is at the medical school, there's a methadone clinic. And they were sitting outside, and they said someone mentioned it and called someone like a meth head or something. And one of the young women said, "Don't do that. That is not nice. And you should call them. They have an opioid chemical dependent or something like that." And I said, and then the other one said they have a crack, or they have a coke. A rock cocaine chemical dependency. I said, he's a crackhead. Is that what you mean? My daughter said, she said that. She said, that's not very nice. This is what you're supposed to say. I said, if you ever, let me tell you something. There's a difference between being alcohol dependent, sleeping pill dependent, and a crackhead. You ever try to chase a crackhead down the street, you'll find out what it is. It's a whole different thing. Crackhead will tell you they're crackhead. A methhead will tell you they're methhead. All of this flowery, sweet language is not going to get us to what we need to get. We building hotels. We giving people needles on the street. We back to the entitlement thing, right? If we're not comfortable facing these uncomfortable topics, we can't fix them. If you don't sit down with an alcoholic and say, put my microwave back in the kitchen, you can't live here because you're stealing food out of the refrigerator and you're selling it. If you're not comfortable with calling, people out for what they're doing and their behavior, you can't not get them to where they need to get, because we're spending too much time talking around the subject and trying to be, they have to hit the rock bottom or they have to make the choices. But if you're not willing to have those conversations, then how do we get there? So how do we positively message the need for responsibility and accountability and retribution so that the community can move forward without tearing one another down, again, without over-policing or over-incarceration? Over-policing does not mean no policing. Over-incarceration does not mean no court incarceration, because some people need to go to jail. Some ain't going to learn. You're fat. Jail. You're stealing $200,000 yeah. worth of stuff, or you got $20,000 worth of stolen yeah. goods in your car, in your house, you need to go to jail. You hitting an old woman upside her head to steal her car, you need to go to jail. You shot through an 880, you on the freeway, and you shooting, and you just killed a pregnant woman and her little 3-year-old, you need to go to jail.
Yes.
Do not collect money. Do not collect anything, right?
Yeah.
You push somebody mm-hmm. down running through the store because you stealing goods, and you push somebody down and they get hurt.
Sure.
Because you try to run
sure.
through, you need to go to jail. Go ahead, sir.
Sure.
I totally agree with that. I believe, like you said earlier, the do-gooders, they're talking to the wrong people. I think they're talking to the wrong people that's giving them an earful of a false need that worked 20 years ago. But it's not that anymore. It's not because the society has put us in a situation to where we got to go steal food and we have to do all these crimes to take care of our family. I think they're listening to that storyline, the do-gooders, and they're not in touch with what's really going on. They're doing something instantly to satisfy a wrong that they know that they had the power to stop a long time ago. And then they're just instantly trying to change something by changing all these laws. It's not and like you said, bad policing is not, you know, you still need to go to jail if you're doing the crime. Another thing is bad management. California is under bad management. We're in such a deficit that they've already made smoking marijuana totally legal. And then that touches back on what you talk about freedom. When we have all of these freedoms, freedom-ish, we have the freedom to smoke as much weed as we want. And because we have that luxury of that choice, it's abuse. And, you know, now they're trying to make mushrooms legal. So society is going to drop down another notch. When we have psychological drugs, recreational drugs, used, legal, society's going to drop down again. So it goes back to me, bad management of the state.
That's good. No, yeah, you're right. So let's go back to one thing, the idea of what you touched on, the politicians. And holding them accountable. The only way to do that is to vote. And that is just one of those overwhelming umbrella sort of general things, is if we vote, they will listen to us. Because they'll pander to us to make during their election cycles to make sure they say the right things to the right demographics. But at the end of the day, they know 18 to 25-year-old black individuals don't vote. But a lot of the laws that they do affect that demographic. So if we really want to see change and really get them to listen, let's start voting them in and out of office. And I guarantee you they will start changing laws. Their tone will change. And within that, we have to remember that this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Things don't happen overnight. And unfortunately, like Brother Lorenzo was saying earlier, that demographic wants instant gratification. They don't understand that things happen over time. Now,
this is true.
One of the other things was the... that always cracks me up. Because there's a difference between an addiction, an epidemic, a crime spree, a drug-infested neighborhoods, and a all of a sudden now it's a sickness. We hear commercials now on the opioid epidemic, the opioid sickness. If your loved one has this sickness, please call this number and we can get them help. Before it is, well, if them, long as them black people keep them drugs in their own neighborhood, it's okay. You're just going
to
lock them up.
Go to jail. Go to jail.
We're going to put them in prison. We're going to ship them away. You know, we're going to make sure they stay over there. But now that the drug addictions have now reached the suburbs, now it's a sickness. Now, hey, we need to be a little bit more understanding on, upon what they're going through. And that's just the simplest way of saying, okay, y'all got mad. One of you congressmen or one of you senators got mad because your son OD'd.
Yeah.
Or stole the silver. Yeah. Stole the silver all of a sudden. He even stole your grandma's silver to go get high, and you don't know what to do with it. So now you're trying to pass some legislation so you can help him. No, he a dope thing. It's okay. Call it what it is.
That's it. That's it.
And it's just that simple. And we can deal with it that way, right? We just deal with it that way.
Yeah.
And it's not, how the redhead was saying, well, that's just not nice. Forget about being nice.
No, she didn't say that. One of the white women said it. Yeah.
One of them friends.
It's a crackhead.
Just leave it at that. That's a crackhead. But no, that's not a nice man. No, he's a crackhead. That's a little dope thing. Look at him. He's doing dope thing stuff. He's a dope thing.
Exactly. So, she grew up in the Bay. She know. She's like. Mm-hmm.
She know.
Because so she knows that's what you stay away from, right? That's what you know. That's how you
exactly.
know to stay away from them. You know, when you
that's
use these flowery words,
you stay away from
tempted,
them.
You
keep all your
don't
stuff.
Don't be tempted to go around them. Yes.
So
hide your stuff.
I want to go back to Maynard for just a quick second. And he did one thing, and Cheryl, you heard me say this. He did what I believe in. You do what's fair and what's right, even if it doesn't benefit you. And he did what you do when you want to develop a moral compass. And he looked at his son, and he looked at what he had stood on and said, you know what, I need to do what's fair and what's right for my son. My son needs help. So therefore, I need to go and make sure, one, he's safe, because you're right, they would have killed him in the streets.
Yep.
But I need to make sure he gets help at my detriment. At my, the hurt, the, you know, and I'm pretty sure his wife blamed him for anything and everything that happened after that. But he understood, I have to do what's fair and what's right.
His son thanked him later. I remember that.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
He thanked him.
Because a lot of these things, people just want help. No one wants to be strung out. People, you know, and you're saying there's a difference. You're saying that there's a difference. Yes, there's a difference between being able to drink and being an alcoholic. You know, there's a difference between taking, you know, medicine that your doctor has prescribed to you to stealing it out of your parents' medicine cabinet. There is a difference. And we need to look at why are you here? Why are you on these drugs? Why are you doing this? And I can speak from that from an experience. One of my sons is going through that. He's in treatment now. And he had to get to the point where he understood that there's a difference in how to deal with things. And some of the things that we had to walk him through, just like Manny's son, he's thanking us now for standing by him. But we had to make some tough choices and some tough decisions. You know, so this is what happens, but we have to go back to understanding what's fair and what's right. even if our kids don't tell us, well, I hate you. Well, you hate me now, but you're going to love me later. It's okay.
That's right. But I love you enough to put you through what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
So, Brother Fleming, Troy brought up a good point about the politicians and holding them accountable as well. One of the things that and about how they pander to us, and one of the things that always bothers me is that pandering. But he's also one of the things that and Sister Martha, please feel free to weigh in too, and Lorenzo and Troy, this is a free conversation, a free flowing conversation. One of the things that always bothers me is that when you have little choices, because certain when you have little choices because of who's running, right? And so this is for the greater community, especially those listening, the greater community is getting people more involved. And we're going to be having some conversations. I've been talking to Engage, very happy to know, to inform everybody. We'll be having AMIAN, American Muslims Elected and Appointed Officials, on next month, along with Engage and with Muslim Democrats and Friends in the next 2 months as we kick off the election cycle. I'm so happy about this. But what do we do? Because part of it is not just the officials who always step up and always come and they talk to us and they tell you what they want you to hear. And you look at the record, it says something different. But how do we get other people who are doing the work more comfortable with stepping out? And they're already shown to be responsible. They've already shown to be accountable. And they've already shown to be, as Lorenzo said when he first came on, like-minded, feel, you know, that they can come in and do this work. And then we have more alliances within the system. What do you have to share? What tips do you have? And then I want to discuss the criminal legal bills that are in motion. But what do you think?
I'm going to try to limit it to 15 seconds, but you know how that works sometimes, Cheryl.
Yeah,
such an important question.
Okay, go ahead with
you.
We still got 30 minutes. Yet, go ahead. I'm going to give you 3 minutes.
Thank you, ma'am. It's such an important question, but I would start off with this. As a group, African-American people, we have to have a cultural standard, period. Now, when it comes to politicians, if they don't meet our cultural standard, if they don't have a proven track record of community work before community engagement and before they even apply for some kind of position to represent us, we have to disqualify them. Now, we have to get out of this habit of having these used car salesmen come by, and that's what I call them, making all these promises. But when you kick the tires, by that I mean you check out their platform, you don't even find your interest mentioned on a platform, but they will tell you anything to get your vote, no different than a used car salesman. So we have to accept responsibility, do our homework, study who these people are and what they represent, take the time to do a little research. And then there are people who are just basically good people concerned about the community, but they shy away from public affairs because of the insanity that they see. I've served as a county commissioner for 5 years and the only Muslim elected in Forsyth County in that capacity. And I would always go out to try to encourage young people at the universities, let's get engaged in this process. Well, politicians say one thing and do another. They're discouraged. So you have to really work with them to prove to them almost that it's worth their time to engage. So you start off with a cultural standard. We have to have the minimum standard that we identify that's absolutely required in our communities. Can you meet this standard? We're not going to tolerate excessive crime. We're not going to tolerate liars. We're not going to tolerate wrong over right. And you can't make right wrong. Pardon me. You can't make
you
wrong
go.
Right.
I like that.
And so
I like
don't
that.
Don't try to justify. Yeah. You can't justify bad behavior. Now, finally, you know, I grew up in a grocery store that my grandfather owned as a small child. If you came into my grandfather's store and took anything, oh, my God, that was a serious consequence because he carried a friend in his pocket at all times. And he would literally empty his friend every night, 6 times in the ground, and laugh about it. He said, boy, I'll shoot you 6 times so fast, you think I'm going to shoot you once? But he would add a few more adjective words to it. But everybody knew you did not come down to Jackson Grocery Fish Market with any kind of foolishness. And sadly, you could still come in there and get food on credit if he knew you. But if you didn't show up on Friday after you shook his hand and he had to look for you, oh, that was not a pleasant experience. So, again, it goes back to having a standard. We have to elevate that standard and have, you know, demand it from any politician who comes our way. And at the same time, encourage those who have really a genuine interest. They've proven themselves in the community to represent our interests. Because, as I said, there are too many politicians that become used car salesmen. And that's the norm, unfortunately, because then they can get away with it. But you hold them accountable. You have your own agenda. You have your own platform. When they come around the community, okay, I have my platform. Will you include some of my concerns and issues on your platform? Will you go in there and fight for me? If not, you know, take a hike. Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't have any more time to waste with you. So we have to have a standard, bottom line. And we have gotten away from holding people accountable. We cannot be shy about that. You know, I have 11 grandchildren. All of them know they don't come to Grandpa with any kind of foolishness. You know, you tell me an untruth one time, Grandpa will remember for 10 years what you told me. Not that I won't forgive them, but you have to tell me the truth. And I will support you 1,000% in what you're doing to improve yourself. I have a granddaughter right now up in New York going to fashion school. I didn't really support the concept of her going to fashion work, but she loves it. So what did I have to do? I had to support her. I have a grandchild in Washington, California, going to film school out there in L.A., in fact. I didn't really like her going into the film industry because I know some of the pitfalls, but she loves that, and she's very successful. She's a sophomore now. So you guys sort of have to get out of their way, support them and the things they do that are good. And the same applies to politicians. You support the ones that do something for you, get rid of the ones that don't, and by all means, hold them accountable and hold the community accountable as well. I hope that was less than 3 minutes. Thanks, Sister Cheryl. I'm finished now for right now. Peace.
Well, it was your kind of 3 minutes.
Okay.
I give you grace. You know, you on that Ghana clock. You know, y'all got y'all.
Okay.
Y'all
yes. All right,
sister. Go ahead, sister.
A couple of things. What he's saying as far as holding politicians accountable. I think we have to have election reform so that we take the money out of these campaigns. And I think that would help us to be able to hold the politicians more accountable because they're accountable to whoever's funding their campaign to get them reelected. That's one thing that I see. I don't think I've met this sister personally. But she's done good work in East Oakland. That's Fania Davis, the sister of Angela Davis, who's been working with youth in Oakland. And what I like is the training that youth are getting in community organizing and then also in restorative justice. Maybe one time we can try and have her on the program. And I know we have a couple of sisters in our community, Nemat Shahid and we forget her first name, who are restorative justice practitioners, because I think that we hold the youth accountable, but we can't put them in the prisons as the prisons exist now. So we have to pressure the politicians to come up with alternative programs that have this restorative justice component where they will be held accountable, where they have to make restitution. There are quite a few brothers I've met who engaged in restorative justice while they were incarcerated, and they've since come out. I can't remember the name of the organization offhand, and they're doing some trainings and helping youth, mentoring, to let them know that glamorous rap language about how going on. When I was coming up, we would say, oh, he's on vacation, meaning that he was locked up in Sing Sing or someplace. But so that whole thing about getting your credibility of going to prison, we have to de-glamorize that whole thing about you have to, for your street cred to be intact, you've had to have to do some time in prison because we have so many brothers that have gotten raped in prison, that have spent time in isolation where they're crazier coming out than when they went in. And so we have to really come up with alternative programs where younger offenders, they don't get locked up with these hardcore criminals because they're just recruited to become hardcore criminals. So there's a lot that we have to do in that area of the criminal legal system. But most importantly, I want to stress that it has to start at the home. We have to get these faith-based leaders to stop talking so much about prosperity and talk about morality. We want to get our share of the earth, of this life, but we also have to instill in people you are accountable to your creator. And until we do that, you know, it's a losing battle because the devil is going to always inflate our appetites. So the time is short, and there's someone who's had their hand up for a while, so I don't want to go on anymore. But those are some of the things that I see.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's really good. And the Contra Costa County DA, Dinah Becton, I sit on her Youth Justice Roundtable, and part of what we do is try to explore alternatives to incarceration, whether it's in the, I call it the baby jail, which is the youth facility or the adult facility. That she does a lot of that too. I mean, some of them, they commit some hardcore crimes. So
yeah,
some of them, the statute requires them to go into the adult facility, but you know, as much as she can, she tries to keep them out, especially the girls, because what we found, some of the girls have been abused at a level that is hard to stomach. She has a whole program that's been funded by this foundation back east that is allowing us to do some of this restorative justice work. But it does have some accountability, and that's all we're looking for, is some kind of accountability and restorative work.
Yes,
sir. Go ahead.
And so, Sister, there's usually some state funding for a group that I participated in for a long time. It's called the Youth Preventive Justice Council. It's Youth Crime Prevention Justice Council, and they have a lot of restorative justice components to it. There's a work-study program in it that if you violate certain, you know, norms in the community and charge a certain level of crimes, you got to work to establish your, first of all, your citizenship to a degree, but also to pay back what you stole. And there are a number of different programs out there like that. And that funding is pretty strong here in North Carolina. But it's called the Juvenile Crime Prevention Council, yes. And they have about 8 different programs within that that has alternative options once students get involved in the system. But the biggest part is not getting them involved in the system to begin with. And that's a component of having
that
cultural standard, prevent them from having those records.
Yeah.
But I'm going to stop there because I know we've got people that want to talk. And
I like that. I think that's great. That's what we have, our Juvenile Justice Council. Something very similar. Okay, so, Sister, who do we have on hold? Do you want to go ahead and...
It's 972-467. Maybe it's Brother Ishmael from Texas. I'm not sure. 972-467.
You want to just bring him on?
Bring him to the queue. Assalamualaikum. You're on map 5. Would you give us your name, where you're calling from, please?
You're correct. This is Ishmael Family, Dallas, Texas.
Assalamualaikum.
Assalamualaikum. It's always a very, you know, thought-provoking and a lot of different opinions on it. So I'm going to keep it quick because we have a lot of voices today. And just going back to what we were talking about at the beginning, we live in this what's called laissez-faire society, free enterprise society. So the government is not going to – they're not going to hold your hand and help you avoid the pitfalls, nor are they going to help you reach the mountaintop. But on the flip side of this free enterprise society, the private sector is not going to hold your hand to help you avoid the pitfalls or you know, help you achieve the mountaintop. It's all whoever knows is going to, they're going to be the ones that are going to rule. So with that being said, there's a there's a parallel power system within our own constitution, because these stores, they're the private sector, so they may let you steal, but they can write it off, so they may look at it as a win. And then the constitution, you know, the our freedom within the constitution is not the same as our freedom within the private sector. So they feed each other. They feed them the criminals, and then they get the money. So in my opinion, until we get a moral compass that's similar, we're going to continue to have this problem. Because y'all talking about the crack and how they changed it to kind of a law. And law is just the interest in the form of legislation. So they were interested in the people that were on meth, the crack people. The lawmakers weren't interested in. So, of course, they're not gonna, you know, do anything towards that interest. But I think with this dual power structure that we have within our own society, it's going to continue until we, the people, select what moral compass we're going to want our Constitution to run by, because that's how our Constitution is made. The criminals can run it if they want to, or the righteous people can run it. So that's my two cents. I had a lot more to say, but I've been enjoying the conversation. Assalamu alaikum.
Cheryl, can I say this one thing to underscore what we've been saying as far as accountability? When you consider the Attorney General in Texas on trial for corruption, right? Former president, four-time indicted, twice impeached, sexual abuser. These are people who are in power, and you see how their supporters respond to them. They don't hold them accountable for the most part. And young minds and our youth coming up, if they can see these type of people getting away, quotes, I'll put air quotes behind that, or even being held up, then we have to have a strong argument, and we have to have an even stronger example for them to not follow those kinds of people that are currently in power. So we have to get those types of folks out of power, the ones who have been corrupted, and get the individuals from our communities, and they're there, who, like Brother Fleming said, have a record of working in the community for the good of the community, to be the leaders that we need to make the changes that we want. That's it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's quite a paradox, because we, you know, I was watching some rappers, you know, they weren't real big names, bemused by this whole thing with 45, right? It's like, if he get away with this, I'm standing with him. I'm standing behind him. That he's the man. It's like, what is wrong with you? That was just not, that was what was going on in the back of my head. Like, what is wrong with you that you think that this is a good thing? Like, what is entertaining about this? But, you know, these microwave societies is what I call it. You know, I got to have it right now. And if I eat too much microwave food, I realize it could be poisoning me, or I could end up with, you know, some kind of cancer or disease or whatever. But you know what? I don't have time to cook. I don't have time to wait. So, matter of fact, I'm just going to eat. You know, I know it's, or I'm going to keep ordering out, or I'm going to eat this salty food, and I know that fresh corn is better for me, but I'm going to eat this canned corn, which has too much potassium and sodium in it, or I'm going to eat this, and I know it's not good for me, but I'm going to eat this packaged instead of fresh, or the society we live in without understanding the consequences. Or even if we understand them, ignoring them, right? Someone drives up to the store. The sign is there. The sign says, take everything out of your car. This area is ripe for theft and thieves. How many times have you heard this story? I just jumped out of the car for a minute.
to go inside and get my coffee in Starbucks. And the thief took my laptop off my front seat.
So they took the whole car.
Or they took the whole car with the child in the back or something like that.
Yes.
I just turned my back for a minute and they stole this. They took my purse out of the front seat. I just went in to pay the gas. Or I stopped at the light and he busted into the window. How many times? Because you did something because it was convenient. You see what I mean? Some of that goes back to the original question about personal responsibility. So we know the issue, and I want to go back to what do we do? Because not everyone is Muslim or Christian or faith-based, period. What do we do? What can we do? I go back to everybody's crying about what they're not doing in schools and that they're shutting down libraries and all of this. There was a time when none of this was taught in libraries anyway, right? And you got what you learned at you know, if you didn't get it at home, you got it through this other support system network, your grandmother, your aunt, you got it at church or youth camp or somewhere else. So how can we get back to that? How can we get back to what kind of, how can we create, I don't like the term safe spaces because I think safe is a relative word. How do we create? And Brother Fleming, I was asking you this earlier, but this question is for all of you. We still have about a little over 10 minutes. How do we create brave spaces for people to really be able to not just discuss these issues, but come up with solutions and stand on these principles? Troy, Lorenzo, Brother Fleming, Sister Masala. Ishmael, you're still unmuted, so anybody, jump in.
All right, then. You know, I think it began with just community coalition concerns, and those concerns, of course, can take any direction that the community needs to go into. But the first one, perhaps, might want to address just the moral fiber that's what we're lacking in the community. After that, we can talk about criminal activity, educational activities, et cetera. But out of the same coalition, community coalition concerns, have it based on grassroots focus, not top-down, but grassroots, to come up with some real genuine solutions. Because the answers usually in the community, not in the Eiffel Towers. And I'll stop there.
We have a community that's divided. Some people in the community, are, even though they don't like the thievery, we have some in the community who are like, I don't agree, but I understand.
Yeah, it only takes a few.
Troy.
Yeah, you have a few. In fact, I think the young lady spent a lot of time with the gorillas in Africa. I can't call her name right now. But she wrote
Margaret
a couple
Lee.
Of books. Yes, that all it takes is a few committed people to change society. So you don't need everybody,
that's
just
what I
committed
to hear.
Few.
That's
and
what
you'll
I wanted
see,
to
and
hear.
You'll see
that's
impact.
What I wanted to hear. Precisely. That's what I wanted to hear. Okay, keep going.
No, I think
we'll pass the baton on.
Yeah,
no, I think he's right. It doesn't take a lot, and it just takes a few who actually really want to stand up
there
and get past the idea of we already know all the questions. We already know. We know what's wrong. We know how to do it. We just need a few to stand up and say this is where we're going. Our community lacks a lot of things, but one of the biggest things that it lacks is leadership. And that's what we need. I mean, we've had that through the 60s and 70s, and it just started to taper off. But that's all it takes. The brothers is 100% correct. Correct. It just takes a few.
Very good. Lorenzo, what you got?
So, my family has always had businesses in the black community, Two Jacks over in the Fillmore, Bayview Hunters Points over there in Sunnydale, San Francisco, housing. I watched my uncle and his liquor stores and his fish markets take the community, give them jobs, whether it's just sweeping the front of the store or coming in and saying a few words to young kids consistently. I've adopted that because my family took me in when my parents weren't able to. So any kid, anytime I have the opportunity to bend one of those youngsters' ears, I do it. I think it starts there, and you don't know how that will spiral into something else.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Well, Brother Ishmael, you're still unmuted, so I'll give you a minute. Go ahead, jump on in.
I'll take less than a minute. I ditto everything they're saying, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
I love a good ditto. Sister Matala, what you got?
There's so much that's been said. First, pray. We got a creator to give us the strength to stand up to the challenge of today and then go out and take action. One-on-one organization in the community is important. Any leaders that are irrelevant, let them go and develop new leadership. And I think what Fleming said as far as listening to the voice of the community and try and bring people to a mutual understanding of what course of action to take and then move out with that action. That's it.
I like it. And I want to add this before we close out. All skin folk ain't kin folk. And all brown ain't down. Y'all have to stop voting just because somebody come into your neighborhood talking about, I'll be the first black person from this in 135 years to represent this area. Vote for me. I'll be the first one with blah, 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 whatever. If, to Brother Fleming's point, if they are not meeting the agenda that the community has prioritized, don't vote them in. And if they're already there, vote them out. But more than that, if you do have people who are stepping forward and willing to do the work of the community and willing to put forward the work and has shown a compensity and a propensity to do the work and to stand tall through it, support them. And if I'm going to tell you that it usually takes three times to convince someone to step out, because it is a big deal to step out, and I know from doing it myself. And for women, it takes about 10 times. You got to ask us 10 times to step out and run for office. It's just how we are. Men, three times, because y'all a little bit easier. You already think you know everything, so that's just how it is. Men, three times, women, 10. We have a lot more to consider. Well, I don't know, you know, I got my job, got my family, got a whole bunch of other things. And women just don't like being in the spotlight like that and being under scrutiny. So if you know someone who you believe will be good in these roles, ask them and ask them again. And if they say no, ask them again and ask them again. But if you ask them, be ready to support them. It's not easy work. But on the other side of it is we need to start recruiting and grooming enough of the next generation. When I mean next generation, I'm not just talking about age. I'm talking about philosophy. I'm talking about community thought. And I'm talking about what is it that drives us to have like-minded people into office to make sure that we're getting the kind of responsible, accountable people in office to drive the community narrative forward. You can't expect it if we're not a la mesa, no se puede establecer la agenda. If we're not seated at the table, not only can we not establish the agenda, we don't even know what the agenda looks like. I'm just going to tell you the truth. They sit here lying to us, telling us that, you know, for me, we at a vegan restaurant. I get there, they don't have nothing but the lettuces on the platter. They got a bunch of salami thrown on it. And tell me that that's my vegan dinner for the night. So you have to be there at the beginning, not just let people come into your space telling you that, I want your opinion. In truth, they already have worked out what's going to be what, and they're bringing you in at the end. So we have to do a better job, all of us, of making sure that someone doesn't come into our neighborhood talking about, I want to be the voice of your community. We know how to speak. We don't need nobody being our voices. We know how to speak. And then when it doesn't work out, we also have to be accountable to say to some of our young people, we failed you. We failed you. So Troy and Lorenzo, these are, we got to look backwards. And Cesar Matala and Brother Fleming, y'all generation failed us. Y'all generation just failed us. Them baby boomers just failed our generation just bad. They just...
They
and I'm not saying
all
that
way
anyway. I'm just saying they just dropped the ball all around. They did. My mom told me that. She said they just failed us. And it was because
you know
that was
funny?
We were the last key children. Yes, go ahead.
You know what's funny, though?
Uh-huh.
A few years ago, I taught communications and podcasting at a continuation school. And in talking to the kids, I realized something. They believe that they were the generation of first, and it's the generation that's coming up behind us, the little millennials. They believe that the first ones to go through anything, to have a girl problem, to have a problem with alcoholism, the first ones to ever smoke weed. And so, but what I got from that was, oh, it's not your fault. It's my generation's
fault.
Because we weren't honest with you and letting you know about how some of y'all parents hooked up, about how your mama was an alcoholic and you was probably conceived in the back of her daddy's Camaro. But
that's right.
And showing them, so we kind of failed them in that sense. We want to be so, you know, separate from our past instead of embracing our past and letting them know this is how I got to where I'm at now.
That's what I mean by saying.
You know, so,
that's what I mean. That's why I said I'm not saying
did.
It
we
as amazing. I'm saying we failed them, and we failed these groups. I try and be very honest with my children in that way and my children's friends in that way. When we show vulnerability, when we show that we're not perfect, when we show that, you know, that there are some things that we could have done differently or should have done differently, not just could have. You show them that the microwave was not invented yesterday. And no, you were not the first video age. We, you know, there was Atari, there was Nintendo, you know, Pac-Man was when we were small. So when you do that, then you open up to, yes, I had anxiety too when I was young, you know, and my daughter thought it was just like, what? You had anxiety? Yes, I did when I was in college. And or I was tempted to say something that was not mine, and then I had my grandmother and my mother pop up in my head, and I was like, yeah, I never want to have that vision in my head of disappointing them. So when we have those kind of frank conversations, we can turn this narrative around that it is hopeless with these children. And I think if we take nothing else out of this conversation, I think getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, having those conversations, we can make that step up to being more responsible and responsive to the needs of this society that has tended to make this left instead of a right or a right instead of a left, whichever direction that is. Instead of being greedy and self-centered, we can go back to leaning on community. With that, thank you, Sir Lorenzo, Sir Troy, Ms. Matla, always a pleasure. Ms. Martha, thank you for joining us this morning. Thank you, Ishmael, and all the rest of the listeners. Thank you, Sir Fleming. We appreciate all of you. And as we head out into our week, Assalamu alaikum, we wish you a great week. Stay powerful, stay purposeful, stay prayerful, stay politically engaged. Participate civically when you can. And remember, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at will change as well. Join us next week for another show, 10 a.m. Pacific time, and Optimal Health is up next. Assalamu alaikum. Enjoy your week.
Assalamu alaikum. Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you all.